This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 101 of the Gunblog Variety Cast. How are you doing, Aaron?
I am doing great, Sean. I just the other day had an interview with Cam Edwards of Cam & Company where I got to talk up Operation Blazing Sword for 10 wonderful minutes on, well, it's not exactly national, but it's the closest I'm going to get.
Yeah, I heard you on that. You did a great job.
Well, thank you. It was an okay interview as far as I'm concerned. I got the message out. Really, the problem right now is the people who listen to Cam & Company are gun owners. And while I'm always happy to have more people volunteer for Blazing Sword, that's awesome, but we've got over 1,200 people. Right now, I've got to try to find ways to reach out to the LGBTQ community and let them know that there are these training options that are available to them. And I'm having a bit of a problem with that, and hopefully once I get the 501c3 paperwork filed and we can start taking contributions, then we can start buying media space, and that's going to be cool.
Buying media space?
Well, you know, like advertising on the newspaper and the radio and things like that. I mean, we're not going to get it for free.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to figure out, are we going to buy ourselves a newspaper or a magazine or something?
Give it time.
I'm kind of wondering if like the local alternate newspapers would be useful venues.
Maybe. I do know that when I was being interviewed by the BBC in West Hollywood, a very liberal and very LGBTQ friendly place, the Rainbow Gadsden signs with shoot back hashtags just started popping up out of nowhere. So there is a sympathetic sentiment there. We've just got to reach it.
And exactly.
I know that when we reach it, we can connect. It's just, how do I get there?
Oh, we'll figure something out on that.
So how are you doing, Sean?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. You know, that dog attacking my dog, the two dogs really they were, but one of them was the lead dog attacking my dog. Yeah, the day after we recorded last week's show, that dog came back out and attacked my dog again. For those who don't know, I spent probably 20 years fighting sword and shield in a historical reenactment combat style that involves hitting people with rattan swords. We're not talking like, you know, patty cake here. We're like, hit people as hard as you can with a solid chunk of wood.
Is there a specific reason you're not enumerating the name of this organization?
No, it's the SCA, Society for Creative Anachronism. It's just that most people have no idea what the name of the society is. So, I mean, why bother?
Okay.
I saw the dog coming in, and I, like I said, the dog had one chance. It put its teeth on my dog. It's all over. The dog was coming in, and I didn't realize it, but I basically, from my dog's perspective, I froze because I was standing in stance ready to swing the sword, a wooden stick really, and I didn't move. I didn't say anything, and I'm waiting for the dog to hit the range where I can take a step and take the shot. And my dog, who usually is, you know, very friendly, or if a dog's coming in obviously to attack, is trying to get away. My dog must have figured, well, it's me or nobody because my human's frozen, and she launched at this dog to try to get it, inadvertently saving this dog's life.
Well, you know, we don't actually want to hurt dogs if we don't have to, right?
Well, in this case, I was ready to blast this dog and end the problem permanently, but Dice has saved the dog's life. I backed off, and I pulled out my phone And I took some pictures to show that the dog was off its property, including all the way across the street. And then I got in touch with the Johnston County Animal Control again and said, look, I get a voicemail back from them saying, oh, you said you had pictures. Please email them. I got an email back from the officer, and the officer said, look, I was out there yesterday, and I told him, let me have those pictures, and I am going to go back out there today. Well, I haven't seen the dogs since. This has been a week, and I haven't seen the dogs. Only today, I heard them barking the first time. So they were silent until today, and they're still invisible. They haven't come off the property. I don't see the dogs. They haven't bothered me, nothing. So this was the second time that officer went out there. First time, he went out the same day, and apparently he went out the same day the second attack. And I think that they've been told that if they get any evidence that the dog's off the property again, they're going to be seized because something changed drastically. So hopefully that'll keep up and I won't have to hit any dogs.
Yeah, hopefully.
So your stickers are in the mail.
I'm getting stickers? Yay!
Yay, Gunblog Variety Cast stickers. They're 2-inch by 2-inch. They're actually kind of small, so therefore think of them as exclusive because any future stickers will be 3-inch by 3-inch. But there are only 60 of them available. And like I said in the last podcast, anybody who sends us voicemail feedback that we play on the show or makes a donation of $5 or more, we will send you a sticker.
Cool beans.
Have you ever seen that snarky list of anti-gun answers to pro-gun arguments? Beth has, and she has some responses. Well, hey, Beth, what's going on this week?
Hey, Sean, I'm actually back up here in good old West Bend, Wisconsin, spending some time with the rest of the USCCA team and having some fun. We're actually planning a live broadcast on Wednesday, so it's always great to be up here in person and have a chance to participate in that.
Awesome. So what are we going to talk about this week?
I thought we would bring up an interesting little topic because, believe it or not everyone in my circle of friends or even in my own family supports our right to keep and bear arms.
No, you don't say.
Yeah, I'm sure you're not surprised at all. In fact, I'm sure you've had the same kind of people in your life. The ones who ridicule, question, or even despise you for your decision to support the Second Amendment, to own firearms, and to carry guns for personal protection.
Well, I try not to have that kind of negativity in my life.
Exactly. And it always seems to be the same exact group of people who likes to post a lot of gun-bashing images and memes on social media sites. And one of the things I often see straight from the gun control folks is this bulleted list of 2A phrases, our talking points or arguments, with their anti-gun smart reply to our so-called stupidity. I was honestly just tired of this, especially since a lot of my gun-supporting friends hear these things a lot, and they don't know how to respond. So I came up with my own replies. But I need you to help me out here. Do you want to play along?
Sure, what do I do?
Okay, here's what we'll do. I'll make the original statement, and then you play the anti-gun person who gives one of their typical answers. So you ready?
All right.
Okay, here's the phrase. Guns don't kill people. People kill people.
By this logic, arsenic and the atomic bomb should be legal too.
Oh, no, no, no. Thanks for starting a list of things that could possibly kill someone. But the statement, guns don't kill people, people kill people, deals with the fact that we need to hold people responsible for killing others, not inanimate objects. Note, arsenic and atomic bombs didn't just get up and take lives by themselves either. Well, and here's another phrase. Why aren't we talking about banning cars, knives, and baseball bats?
Cars, knives, and baseball bats have other purposes than killing. Guns don't.
Well, a surprise, guns do have another purpose than killing. In fact, the purpose of every gun in my home is to protect my family, others, or myself by stopping a threat. If they truly believe that the purpose of a gun is to kill, then all of my firearms must be defective, along with millions of other guns out there. Here's another favorite. We don't know that tighter gun laws will reduce violence.
They have in Great Britain, Japan, Australia, Finland, Spain, Germany, and Canada. Let's take a chance.
Where are the statistics? Where is the research? Where is the truth? Tighter gun laws have not reduced violence in these countries. There's violence wherever there are violent people, and I think we've definitely seen that of late. In 2002, 5 years after enacting its gun ban, the Australian Bureau of Criminology acknowledged that there was no correlation between gun control and use of firearms in violent crime. Here's a quote. "The percentages of homicides committed with a firearm continued its declining trend since 1969. As well, during that same time period, all other violent crime indices increased in Australia. So assault rose 49.2%, robbery by 6.2%, sexual assault increased 29.9%, and overall, Australia's violent crime rate rose 42.2%. Australian women are now raped over three times as often as American women. If you don't believe it, you are more than welcome to move to any one of those places and check it out for yourself." Another phrase that the anti-gun folks love to twist around is, drugs are illegal and people still do drugs.
By that logic, we should not have laws against murder.
Okay, to reply to the anti-gunner who says that, you can just tell them the point of the statement about illegal drugs is not that we should not have laws. The point is that laws don't keep bad people from doing bad things. Laws haven't stopped criminals from getting drugs and doing bad things with them, and laws won't stop criminals from getting guns and doing bad things with them either. Another phrase we hear is this: we need better mental health programs and regulation of violent video games.
Agreed, but that's called changing the subject.
Here's my reply to that. As far as mental health is concerned, how is that changing the subject? It's most certainly not changing the subject when you look at the enormous percentage of shootings that were carried out by those who are mentally ill. Mental illness is part of the problem. And talking about better mental health programs is not changing the subject. It's dealing directly with the subject, if you ask me. Here's another phrase. We need to be able to defend ourselves from the government.
The Pentagon spent $664.84 billion in 2011, but seriously, tell me about your assault rifles.
Okay, here we go again. First, they are not assault rifles. The AR stands for the manufacturer, Armalite. Thus, they are Armalite rifles. Second, we need to be able to defend ourselves from anyone or anything that threatens our lives or our freedoms. That's how America got here in the first place. And third, was that an argument or just completely random thoughts? Another phrase, firearm deaths are way far down the list of causes of death in America.
So is breast cancer. Should we stop searching for a cure?
My reply, okay, fine. You want to talk about changing the subject? That is a perfect example of changing the subject. I'm not sure what finding a cure for breast cancer has to do with firearm deaths. Let's get a lesson on logical fallacies here, because that statement is a painful example of several. And here's one of the last ones we hear. Legislation won't solve the root of the problem.
When Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Bill, it's not as if all of a sudden there were no racists. But 50 years later, we have a black president. Laws don't change society, they shape them. Maybe in another 50, after effective gun legislation, we can go 12 months without a school shooting.
And here's my reply to that anti-gun statement. How is punishing everyone going to solve anything? And what legislation do they believe will make bad guys care about legislation? Law-abiding citizens are the only ones obeying laws. So let's go back to the root of the problem instead of changing the subject and throwing racism into the discussion. The root of the problem is evil. Evil people will do evil things with whatever they can get their hands on. And we are never better off when government restricts defensive options for law-abiding people. Now, clearly, I don't have all the right answers to these statements, and I might not ever win over any anti-gun people with my responses. But maybe this helps inspire others to stay strong and at least to stay in the fight.
Thanks, Beth. That was a good game. But I kind of feel like my brain has turned into mush just sharing all those stupid anti-gun non-arguments.
Oh, I bet. But I know you'll be okay. In fact, I'm sure of it, so just shake it off. And in the meantime, y'all stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Two North Carolina men facing murder charges for shooting elderly woman to death. Dateline, Kinston, North Carolina. Two men are now facing murder charges for shooting and killing a 71-year-old woman in Lenoir County. The Lenoir County Sheriff's Office says it arrested Suspect 1, 32 of Kinston, and Suspect 2, 36 of Greenville, on July 1 and July 2. Both are charged with first-degree murder and robbery with a dangerous weapon in connection with the June 12th murder of Marilyn Riley Noble. Noble was killed during the robbery of a business located at 2358 Highway 1155.
Stop by and say hi.
In Kinston. During the investigation, sheriff's detectives recovered numerous pieces of evidence and assistance from the public that aided in identifying the individuals who committed the crimes. Both suspects are currently behind bars in the W.E. Billy Smith Detention Center under no bond. This brings closure to a lengthy investigation that took hard work of law enforcement officers from numerous agencies, Sheriff Ronnie Ingram stated. We are pleased that we are able to arrest the suspects to face charges for their crimes. Although the family of the victim can never regain what they have lost, I hope that they will find some peace in knowing that the suspects in this incident will face justice for their actions. The Lenoir County Sheriff's Office was assisted in investigating an arrest of these suspects by the Kinston Police Department, Greenville Police Department, and the NCSBI Fugitive and Missing Persons Task Force. So what kind of people do you think wander into a business and murder a 71-year-old woman in the process of armed robbery?
Girl Scouts selling cookies, perhaps?
Probably. Suspect 1, assault with a deadly weapon, misdemeanor, Class A1. Possession with intent to sell and distribute counterfeit controlled substance, felon, Class I. And counterfeiting, felon, Class I.
Well, now we know what business it is.
Suspect 2, worthless check, misdemeanor, Class 3. Open container of alcohol after consuming, misdemeanor, Class 2. Miscellaneous motor vehicle violation, misdemeanor, Class 2. Operate vehicle without a license, misdemeanor, Class 2. Driver's license revoked, misdemeanor, Class 1. And possession with intent to sell, Schedule 6, felon, Class I.
Honest, trustworthy folks.
Sometimes you can't even trust downloads from the program publisher's website. Barron explains how it's possible to spread malware from the source of legitimate computer programs in...
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips.
Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Barron.
So Barron, what's new this week?
Beware of malware embedded with what would normally be a legitimate application.
Wait, what? If it's malware, how could it be legitimate?
Because you got the application directly from the source, but there's one little problem. The source has been compromised.
So what would normally be trusted can suddenly no longer be trusted?
Exactly. There's a tool known as AMI Admin, which is used for remote administration. Now, I'll be honest, this is the first I've ever heard of this tool, but evidently a criminal gang took over the website that you used to download the utility from and uploaded their own executable. Their executable also provides their own remote administration tool.
Wait, if you installed a remote administration tool, how would you know that there was a second installed next to it?
That right there is one of the key benefits of this attack. When installing it on the computer, odd behavior could be explained away as being expected. And this brings us to the problem. How do we really tell friend from foe? What really establishes trust? In this case, the vendor, whom should be trusted, has been compromised. How can you tell that something you've downloaded from their site isn't really their product?
Oh, that doesn't sound like an easy problem to fix.
It isn't, Sean. Luckily, though, throughout the industry, a few things are happening that benefits average users. App stores. Microsoft, Apple, and depending on the flavor of Linux, all provide app stores now to get software. While not entirely foolproof, this automates the one real solution to the problem, signatures. When a software company makes an application, they sign it. This signature can then be verified, and any tampering of the application causes the signature to fail.
So how can I be sure that I've downloaded the right program?
Well, if you're not using an app store, the best way to do this is a hash string. A lot of websites will include a hash after the executable link. They expect you to verify your download by checking the hash of the downloaded file with the one they provide. There is, however, one little problem with this approach. If the site delivering the material is compromised, you can't trust their posted hash value. It could have been altered as well. A side solution to this, though, is to find other trusted sources who can independently validate the expected hash. For example, update mirrors for Linux all contain hash listings for the packages. This is why signatures are handy. It's that hash, validated with a private secret known only to the vendor. you can validate their signature with the public side of their key.
That certainly seems to be a pain to do by hand, though.
It definitely is, Sean, and it violates my transparent security rules doing it by hand. However, only power users should really be running into this problem. For the most part, more and more apps should be available in the stores for their given operating system. Even better, though, we will see package signatures going forward on software. The user, though, will ultimately be responsible for making sure the package signature matches who should be signing the software. Sadly, right now, the best way to deal with this is to be vigilant and remember that even trusted sites can go rogue.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
This week's main topic, the Massachusetts assault weapons ban. So, did you catch that yesterday? The Attorney General has decided that if you can swap parts or if it has essentially the same operating system as any banned weapon, then it's basically it's identical.
Yeah, that's... Okay, that's an abomination. So, you are more of the type of person to actually read the legalese, so let me know if I get something wrong here. But from what I understand, the Attorney General, first and foremost, is adopting the old 1984 federal assault weapons ban.
Well, as I understand it, that is the current law in Massachusetts, is the federal assault weapons ban. Just so that everybody can take a good look at it, I've got a link to it in the show notes, and it says, this is in the definition section, assault weapon shall have the same meaning as a semi-automatic assault weapon as defined in the Federal Public Safety and Recreational Firearms Use Protection Act, 18 U.S. Code, Section 921, Sub A, Sub 30, as appearing in such section on September 13, 1994. So, what does that sound like to you?
It sounds like the federal assault weapons ban.
Exactly. That's the formal name for the old Clinton assault weapons ban. So, we know what the Clinton assault weapons ban was, right?
Yeah, it's the evil features rule.
Evil features rule. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, you know, features X, Y, and Z are bad, like pistol grips, bayonet holder things. What's the technical
lugs.
Term? Lugs, thank you. Bayonet lugs, grenade launchers, maybe even flash hiders, I'm not sure. But all of those contributed to evil features, and they made the gun extra super assaulty deadly.
We all know that bayonet lugs have to go because of all the drive-by bayonettings.
Exactly. And so in a wonderful show of capitalism and innovation, the gun companies removed those features and sold the guns because capitalism finds a way.
Exactly. If you ban something specific, you must not have two or more of these features, then what is the gun company going to do? They're going to remove all but one of the features, in this case, the pistol grip. So,
exactly.
No flash hiders, no bayonet lugs.
In the midst of all this, you've got the gun rights supporters who are pointing out, quite rightly, that these rules make bans absurd and capricious because, okay, they're trying to ban the AR-15. Well, all right, we'll remove the bayonet lug and the grenade launcher and the pistol grip and those other things, and now we're going to sell it again. And the anti-gun people are screaming that, No, you found a loophole.
You found a loophole by following the law.
Yes, exactly. You found a loophole by finding a law and selling your gun in a completely legal manner.
Exactly. One of the things that the law in Massachusetts goes on to say is that in addition to being the federal assault weapons ban, it shall include but not be limited to any of the following weapons or copies or duplicates of the weapons of any caliber known as and a list of weapons, which was basically what happened in the federal assault weapons ban, right? There was a list of banned weapons, and then there was that feature test. So what did the Attorney General do about this?
So the Massachusetts Attorney General then issues a directive, doesn't pass a law, issues a directive, an interpretation, if you will, sort of the same way that the ATF issues a directive on how it's going to interpret certain laws. And this directive specifically outlines two tests to determine what constitutes a copy or a duplicate of a prohibited weapon. And those two tests are if the gun's operating system is essentially the same as that of a banned weapon, or if the gun has components that are interchangeable with those of a banned weapon. And if one of those two tests pass, it's a copy or it's a duplicate and it's illegal.
Ah, so let's see what she said. Now, helpfully, the Attorney General published an article in the Boston Globe saying exactly what she wanted to do. The gun industry has found a way to exploit our laws, a loophole of potentially horrific proportions, and it's time we act. Wow, that's, I mean, right there, that's just like some great theater, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Massachusetts assault weapons ban mirrors the federal ban Congress allowed to expire in 2004. Congress allowed to expire. Congress refused to renew.
It had a sunset proposition put in.
Yeah.
That's the only way the thing passed in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, we don't want it again. It prohibits the sale of specific weapons like the Colt AR-15 and AK-47 and explicitly bans copies or duplicates of these weapons. But gun manufacturers have taken it upon themselves to define what a copy or duplicate weapon is. They market state-compliant copycat versions of their assault weapons to Massachusetts buyers. They sell guns without a flash suppressor or folding or telescoping stock, for example. Small tweaks that do nothing to limit the lethalness of the weapons.
Oh my God, those terrible, awful gun companies selling products in full and complete compliance with the law.
That will end now. On Wednesday, we are sending a directive to all gun manufacturers and dealers that makes clear that the sale of these copycat assault weapons is illegal in Massachusetts. With this directive, we will ensure we get the full protection intended when lawmakers enacted our assault weapons ban, not the watered-down version of these protections offered by gun manufacturers. Wow. The directive specifically outlines two tests to determine what constitutes a copy or duplicate of a prohibited weapon. If a gun's operating system is essentially the same as that of a banned weapon, or if the gun has components that are interchangeable with those of a banned weapon, it's a copy or a duplicate and is illegal.
And the real problem here is that second bit, the gun has components that are interchangeable with. I'm going to quote from my marvelously smart friend, the Jack. All right, so take the banned semi-auto AR-15. This is, by definition, banned by the assault weapons ban. So you take a pump action AR-15. That's not semi-auto, but it shares parts. So it's banned. So now we take a plain Jane pump action shotgun, like say a Mossberg 500 or a Remington 870. Well, since the operating system of the pump action shotgun is now the same as the AR-15, does this mean pump shotguns are banned? I mean, it really looks like it does. It looks like they are trying to ban not just anything that is self-loading, but anything remotely related to it. From what I can tell, it looks like Massachusetts will allow you to own a revolver, a break-action shotgun, and a single-shot bolt-action rifle.
I'm not sure that's going to be the problem that you've outlined, because part of the law says that the things that can't be considered an assault weapon is any weapon that is operated by a manual bolt, pump, lever, or slide action. So those are specifically removed from the assault weapons ban in Massachusetts.
So we've got one part of the law contradicting the other part of the law?
I have no idea. Her directive is directly contrary to the law if they attempt to ban pump action AR-15s, because it says pump action.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the problem is things like the Intratec Tech 9 is a banned weapon.
Do they still make those, for crying out loud? Last time I saw them was in the early 90s.
I have no idea. It's not something I really spent a lot of time looking at. The other thing is the M10, M11, and M11/9, and the M12. How do they operate? How does a Tech 9 operate?
Oh, I see where you're going. You're talking about gas blowback?
Exactly.
Recoil operated?
Yep. Gas blowback, recoil operated, any of those standard operating systems that are the way my pistol operates.
Yeah, they've basically eliminated the self-loading pistol and rifle.
Pretty much.
Shotgun too.
How do any semi-automatic rifles operate? Do they operate any differently than what an AR-15 does? An AR-15 is a direct impingement gas system. How does your average semi-auto shotgun and semi-automatic rifle work? They're not gas blowback. They're not recoil operated. They're usually gas operated weapons.
You might have a piston operated AK or SKS.
Which is banned. An AK is banned. It's a piston. Whoop-de-doo. It's a gas operated system. According to what she says here, A gun's operating system is essentially the same as that of a banned weapon. What does that mean? Does that mean that my handgun, which has the same operating system basically as a Tech 9, is now banned?
It sounds like it, yeah.
See, that's what I don't get. The other thing I just don't seem to understand here, I just don't get, is that none of these weapons were in violation of the federal assault weapons ban, because that ban copies.
Mm-hmm.
If they were perfectly legal in the federal assault weapons ban, which is what Massachusetts adopted, then how are they illegal under the Massachusetts law? It's basically, this is what federal law was, so that's what we have.
Well, to quote Weird, it's because Massachusetts is the cradle and grave of freedom.
Pretty much. Here's the other problem we run into, is that the first person takes it to court, takes it to a state court, because that's the law that is being fought, is a state law. It's an interpretation of a state law, so it has to go to state court. It doesn't go to federal court. And even if it went to federal court, what do you do? We're not getting any good decisions out of anybody right now. You're certainly not going to get a good decision out of a Massachusetts state court. The Massachusetts, all the way up the line, is just going to say, yep, whatever she says is golden. I ended up talking to Andrew Branca about this, and that's exactly what he said. He said, you're not going to get a good decision out of Massachusetts. They're just going to uphold whatever she says. She realizes she can do whatever she wants and nobody can stop her. Short of people just saying, screw you, we think your interpretation is wrong, we're going to sell them anyway. Stroke of the pen, law of the land.
Congratulations, by the way, to Andrew Branca, who is actually getting out of Massachusetts and moving to the far more free Colorado.
Far more free, but not free enough with their...
Yeah, not free enough, but maybe he can help shift the tide.
Exactly. Maybe one more vote will help.
But, you know, it's not Massachusetts. That's the important thing.
I think it's also interesting that she said, oh, we recognize that most residents who purchased these guns in the past believe they were doing so legally, so this directive will not apply to the possession of guns purchased before Wednesday.
What?
Yeah, so they're all illegal, but we're not going to punish you for and take away your property for having followed the law as you thought it was. You thought it was legal. Yeah. Basically, that's just if we told you we were going to take them away from you, people would get shot in the process of confiscating them, or the police would say, no, we're not going to bother. I think this is one of those things that is just nothing can be done about it. I don't think the courts are going to stop her. I don't think that anybody's going to pass a law that changes it. It's Massachusetts. It's over. They can do what they want.
Yeah. You remember that phrase from the movie, It's Chinatown, Jack?
Yep.
I'm kind of getting the feeling we're going to have the equivalent version of It's Massachusetts. What are you going to do?
Exactly. And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey, or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state, and make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette!
So last week I mentioned knowing alternate routes to avoid roadblocks, and I suggested having a map with you or using a driving app. Today I'm going to talk about the various kinds of maps and navigational apps preppers ought to have in their figurative toolbox. First off, Google is a godsend for these kind of things. Between Google Maps and Google Earth, anyone with a smart device can have access to maps, both driving and topographical, of the entire planet. And that's not to be underestimated at all. It's neat living in the future where my magic elf box can give me directions from space. Also, and I found this out because I'm a cheapskate who refuses to pay for a cell phone plan, So long as I have a connection to the internet, like through Wi-Fi, when I ask for directions with Google Maps, it will keep navigating me even if I lose my connection later. I'm not entirely certain how this works. I have an old iPhone 4, so this trick might not work on different models or on Androids, but give it a try. It might help, and you might save some bandwidth. But if it doesn't, there's still a way to download Google Maps to your device so that you can use the navigation offline, and there are instructions for that in the show notes below. Speaking of live maps, there's also a neat online resource called the Map of Real-Time Disasters. It's another version of Google Earth, but updated with pins of disasters or hotspots you can click on to find out more information. For example, by looking at the map, I can see that there have been a series of magnitude 2 earthquakes in California around Fresno. There's a chickenpox outbreak in San Diego, and that the squirrels in Dark Canyon and Marion Mountain campgrounds in Palm Springs have plague. And that's a level 4 biohazard, by the way, so take care. You can also download U.S. geological surveys as well, and they are a hybrid of topographical and roadmap. They're very small in scope. For example, it takes 10 maps just to cover my home county, which is not very big. But they were made in 2015, so they're recent. And I can download them in PDF format for offline use on a smart device, or I can print them out and laminate them. And speaking of paper, preppers ought to have paper maps as well for a variety of reasons. Devices can break or run out of power or get stolen, and it's awfully hard for me to get a sense of scale if I'm constantly scrolling between pages. So here are three kinds of old-school paper maps that everyone needs. 1. A map of your city, if you're urban, or your county, if you're not. The greater the detail on this, the better you are. And you can probably find these for a few dollars at your local grocery store or gas station. 2. A map of your state, preferably laminated, because not only does that make these maps last longer, it also makes them easier to fold as well, and you can draw on them with grease pens. You can usually find these for sale next to your city maps, and if not, you can order them from Amazon. Check the link below. And finally, 3, get a current road atlas. The 2017 edition of the Rand McNally Large Scale Road Atlas is a steal for just $12.40. And not only does it cover the entire continental United States, but it's also spiral bound. And as a veteran of many, many road trips, trust me when I say that the ability to fold that book in half is not to be underestimated when you're trying to figure out just where the heck you are from the front seat of your car.
All right, Aaron, that's some good information. And I gotta say, I love maps.
Okay.
I think it's a guy thing. When I was living in an apartment right after I got out of the Navy, I took a map of the United States and pinned it to the wall next to the door. And my girlfriend at the time's father came to visit us, have dinner with us or something. And he got two steps in the door and there was the map of the United States. I think there was a map of Europe next to it. And we just stood there and we're looking at the map. It was like, it's like map, map.
Well, you know, men are visually oriented, and so maps, blueprints, deck plans, things like that, it all sort of tickles the same optical nerve.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, it was funny. We're like just guys and maps. Oh, we got to look at the map. So it's probably a good idea. I should probably consider, first off, I really should consider getting the offline maps for Google Maps for those times where you just don't have a signal, where you just can't pick up the map.
Yeah, like if you're going through a tunnel.
I'm not so worried about that. I'm talking about when you go to some rural location where you just don't have a signal.
Oh, yeah.
There are places like that in North Carolina. And, you know, I've several times had to drive for a length of time until I got a signal before I could convince Google Maps to tell me where to go next.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, always have a backup. And electronic devices are great until they stop working. Paper gives you another option.
Yep, this... As I've heard it, the search function is terrible, but data integrity is fantastic.
I can't tell you how many times I've been reading something physically, and my fingers have done Control F. They've just done that motion. It's like, why isn't it working?
Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support. This week, Weird and Tiffany got together to talk about their common anti-gun history and how they each came to see the light.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Aaron. I hope you guys are having a wonderful week. I'm having a fabulous week myself. And I'm super excited because today for The Bridge, I have a special guest, someone who you both know very well and who all of our listeners also know very well, our own Weird Beard of of Anti-Gun Nuttery. So, Weird, how's it going?
Hi, Tiffany. Ever since I first heard your segment, I went, we got to get together because we kind of got similar origin stories.
Well, you know, I had heard about that when I first came to the show, and Sean kept saying, you know, another one of our contributors has a similar background. So I was like, yeah, right. Nobody has a similar background. So I thought that we could share just how similar our backgrounds are, because I think that a lot of people don't realize just how common it is, or potentially is, for folks out there who were once anti-gun or who may currently be anti-gun to not be complete and total lost causes, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's got to be more common. It seemed like when I was first getting into the whole gun thing and doing the blogging and the podcast, it seemed like I was one of the few people. Everyone I knew that was pro-gun and doing this thing started off as a young kid, you know, shooting with mom and dad and hunting with their family, or at least growing up in a very friendly environment to guns.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case with me, and I don't think that wasn't the case with you. So what got you started?
I started out, it wasn't so much that my family or that my household was explicitly anti-gun, as much as it was that guns were never part of the culture. I grew up in the middle of the city in Memphis, Tennessee. There weren't a whole lot of people around us who were vocal about having guns. That's not to say that they didn't have them. Let's not make that mistaken assumption. But it just never came into my thought process. It wasn't like we were, you know, hunting or fishing or anything like that, or had any real access to any kind of shooting sports. So the only exposure I ever had to guns was their being used in violent crime, which in Memphis, Tennessee, one of the most dangerous cities in the country, I heard about violent crime all the time. And most of the violent crime, at least by the time it got filtered down to my household through the news or whatnot, was perpetrated with the use of a firearm. I don't ever remember anyone saying to me, guns are bad or guns cause crime or anything like that. But I think the subconscious link was just made just because every time I ever heard about crime, it had something to do with guns and it had something to do with alcohol. Two things that I never touched for the whole first 25 years of my life.
Well, that's interesting. I'm a little bit different because I grew up in Maine, and I grew up in the big city of Maine, which is Portland, which is pretty tiny compared to just about every other place that calls itself a city. We had relatives who absolutely were hunters. I mean, there was lots of people that owned guns, and it was actually pretty open. I mean, I remember go over to my uncle's house, and he had a little office with a computer in it. He was one of the first people in my family to have a computer, and I used to go with my cousins, and we'd play video games on the computer, and there, hanging above the computer, was his deer rifle. But that's, you know, that was pretty commonplace, of having a deer rifle or a shotgun hanging up someplace or all that. You knew not to touch it. And actually, my father owned guns the entirety of my life. He grew up on a farm up in northern Maine and learned to shoot at a very early age and never liked it at all. I've never heard a positive story from dad about shooting guns or hunting. Like, he just sounds like he found it overall just a miserable, unenjoyable experience. But for whatever reason, he kept both his guns and unfortunately didn't really keep them up very well. And he had a shotgun and a .22 rifle. Thankfully, actually, a friend of mine managed to restore the rifle, and that's going to actually be my daughter's first gun when she's old enough to handle that. It was a miracle work, but
very cool.
It's very cool. It's very cool.
That sounds cool.
Guy said, I got it shooting again. And I went, got what shooting again? The rifle you sent to me to destroy. My friend's an FFL. and I sent it to him to destroy it because I'm like, Dad's going to die, and then Mom's going to pitch us in the trash, and then someone's going to find a firearm in the trash, and she's going to go to federal prison and die there as an old lady. And I said, look, just cut this thing up with a bandsaw and let's be done with it. And he got it shooting again, and he said, you want me to fix it up? I said, yeah. He goes, how much do you, you know, how much are you willing to put into it? I said, spare no expense.
And nice.
But yeah, but my folks were, well, my dad specifically, my mom kind of tags along. She's kind of apolitical, if you will. But my father is very liberal through my entire life. I mean, I remember my dad voting for Walter Mondale. So that says quite a bit. And so
that's
very
funny.
Much tagging along with all of those very standard tropes and boilerplate platforms. So my father was anti-gun, was not for guns. Like I said, he had some guns in the house, but they were never handled. They were never touched. It was pretty much, it was ever so often brought up that they were around and that, you know, that they were not something that we were going to deal with. I think he might've fished one out at one point from wherever the heck he hit him. I never even knew where he hit him. And just showed it to me and just said, yep, there, here's a big old cobweb covered shotgun.
That's interesting, though, because that's one way in which our backgrounds differ, because you seem to, it sounds like guns were sort of ubiquitous in your household, although they might have been sort of passively maligned. Whereas with me, it just never occurred to me at all. Like, yeah. I never even thought about, I had never seen up close a real, quote unquote, a real gun. My only experience, again, was what I'd heard on the news and like stories and stuff, and what I'd see in movies. And that was it. I had never actually, I distinctly remember the first time I laid eyes on a real gun that was within arm's reach of me. And I remember studying the different parts and the different, you know, stampings and everything in the metal and all. It was kind of like, ooh, this is a weird anomaly for me. It was very odd. It was like finding a unicorn.
That's interesting. Well, another weird thing about growing up in New England is there's dead British soldiers all over the place here. And it's marked, and it's, you know, they're tourist attractions, and you go there on school field trips. Is the Revolutionary War is a very real thing here, and, you know, very tangible. So I also had a very real understanding of the Second Amendment. I knew that it was, we rose up against our government and overthrew them. And we did that with guns that we owned. So that was all that. But again, I was born in 79. So I was really coming of age in the early 90s. And that was when, you know, Columbine and the federal assault weapons ban and all of these major gun control events or major, you know, catalysts for gun control. That's exactly the right word for that. Were happening. And so, I mean, I remember, you know, cheering on Bill Clinton with the assault weapons ban and, you know, hearing all the things about automatic weapons and,
yeah.
And, you know, seeing stuff like the 94 assault weapons ban bans guns from having grenade launchers on them. Well, geez, why would you have a grenade launcher on your gun?
Well, that makes perfect sense, right? Who needs a grenade launcher? So what was the turning point for you? When did you start having a change of heart?
The big change was when I went to college. I went to college in Orono, Maine, which is in the middle of the woods. It's a state school, so there's a lot of local people there. And I was very close friends with a guy who lived about a half hour from campus and out in the middle of the woods in, you know, absolute rural nowhere, Maine. And his father had a personal shooting range that he had built in his backyard. And he just said to me, hey, do you want to go shooting? And it was the same idea of the, hey, do you want to go skydiving? Hey, do you want to,
right.
You know, do you want to do some laps on a racetrack? It's just the, hey, this is a new experience. And he was saying it wasn't going to cost me any money. So yeah, sure. And I went shooting and that was cool and, you know, neat and all that until his father's 1911 came out. And that was the bug that bit me. That was the first gun that really, really flipped me. I love 1911s.
I do too. I do too.
Love at first sight and all that. But I was still anti-gun. I was now suddenly the I'm a gun owner, but category, if that was the, I really wanted a 1911. I mean, I was a broke college student at that point in time and I was only 19, so I couldn't legally buy one in the state of Maine, but it was, I wanted one. Mm-hmm. I still felt all for restrictions, but I wanted one really more just as a play thing, but I couldn't afford one. So I just started reading. I can't have one, but I'll read about one. And I started learning technical specs on guns. And that leads us back to the federal assault weapons ban. This is, you know, 1999. And I'm reading about, you know, the ballistics difference between, you know, 308 and 30-06 and 30-30, which is what the, you know, standard deer rifles were. And the OK guns and 12 gauge, all the stuff that my relatives had that weren't, you know, necessarily Second Amendment people, but they were hunters and shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at 223 and 7.62 by 39 and going, these are less powerful rounds. These are less deadly than the quote unquote scary, you know, the quote unquote safe, you know, hunting guns. And then seeing stuff like I mentioned the grenade launcher, realized that, oh, no, it's not, you know, an M203 grenade launcher under an M16 in the military. No, it's a muzzle device that allows you to put a rifle grenade onto it that's fired by a blank, which is really just a historical anachronism, if anything. You know, it just suddenly getting to point of the, wait, this, none of this makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, and it's not machine guns. And I mean, I remember seeing some of the now famous news reports, if you dig deep into the trenches of this, of the news reports that actually showed people shooting machine guns and then talking about the federal assault weapons ban. And I realized that I'd been lied to. And so then my next step was to start reading all the NRA stuff and try to figure out, all right, now how are they lying to me? And I really didn't find any major oversights. I mean, it's, you know, propaganda they're going to be leading you, but they were leading me, but not misleading.
Right.
And at that point in time, I really had to make a major turning point in my life. I had to decide, am I still going to be anti-gun or am I going to be pro-gun?
It sounds like you more or less made this journey on your own, kind of a solo thing.
Yeah. I vaguely remember having a discussion with a pro-gun person when I was in college. And speaking for the fact of having more regulations on guns and being anti-gun, and remember just them just mopping the floor with me. But same idea was the big thing was, wow, I really got dusted up by that ignorant gun owner. Well, guess what? It's just because he was more prepared than I was, so I'm going to get prepared. And that further just sent me down the room of the, oh man, this isn't going in the right direction for me. How about you?
Well, again, it's so funny. We started in the same place. We ended up in basically the same place and took completely different paths to get there. My journey was by no means solo. It's funny. I got to the point where I was so consciously anti-gun that I wanted to learn more about my quote unquote enemy. I wanted to be able to speak intelligently when I was protesting guns. I noticed, as a gun control advocate, that most gun control advocates didn't know anything about guns. And I saw that as a weakness in our argument, the gun control advocates. And so I said, well, I'm not going to be like that. And so I'll go and take a gun class so that while I am explaining why I'm for gun control, I can speak intelligently and speak the same language of my, you know, political opponents or what have you. That was my sole goal in taking the permit class. And my permit class 15 years ago was, again, literally my first time being within arm's reach of an actual firearm of any kind, long gun, handgun, pistol, revolver. It was just by sheer blind luck that the local gun shop down the street from my house just happened to be Rangemaster, where Tom Givens is the lead instructor and built the thing from the ground. And anyone who trains in the defensive side of handguns is familiar with Tom Givens. And now he's a father figure of mine, really, certainly a mentor. But I had no idea who Tom Givens was at the time, and Rangemaster didn't mean a thing to me. It was just the closest gun shop to my house. And so I went there and took the permit class. And, you know, the guys there, it was mostly guys, they just welcomed me with open arms. I didn't have an objective motive in going there, I can say honestly now. I had my mind made up, and I just wanted to, as I said, be more informed about what I was opposing. But all they saw was somebody who was there ready to learn. And they didn't ask me about my motives. And so they just started pouring information into me. And for some reason, Tom took me under his wing. And, you know, within a year, I was a certified instructor. And I've now taken every class that Tom offers. And he sent me to some of his colleagues in the training community to get a broader, you know, scope of viewpoints and whatnot. And so I come to this from a completely 100% self-defense standpoint. I don't have any experience in hunting or shooting sports whatsoever. But I have to say, you know, in hindsight, I'm kind of floored by the complete 180-degree turn that I made. And that brings me to what I really wanted to talk to you about, which is how to keep that door open for other folks who may be like you or like me, even if they don't even realize it yet. You know, you never expected to end up being a total Second Amendment advocate, and neither did I. And yet here we are. And so now in the gun community, I so often find myself kind of shrieking and, you know, cringing when I hear some of the things that our fellow gunnies say about the quote unquote anti-gunners. And it's, you know, I can't help but think to myself, man, they're talking about me, right? And I mean, if they weren't my friends, I'd be offended by some of the things that they say. So I worry that pro-Second Amendment folks are often alienating potential allies without even realizing it. What do you think about that?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. I mean, I've got to say, I like to think of the opposition to the Second Amendment side as really two different people.
Yeah.
Anti-gun people, which are the people that I talk about exclusively in my segment.
Yep.
And then people who support gun control. So I'm really more pro-gun control, because the anti-gun people, there really isn't a hope. I mean, there really isn't. These are the type of people that you say, look, let me take you shooting. Let me talk about this. Let me, you know, show you some information. Let's sit down and debate.
And they're like, no.
There's a reason why I do the anti-gun nuttery segment. It's because I can't talk to these people. I can't debate them. They won't talk to me. I've even set up debates with anti-gun people, and it's ended up never materializing. I've chatted on their blogs and I get banned, even when being polite and respectful.
Right.
So there's definitely the people that are lost cause. I don't know what their story is actually. I can't even get beyond them. I can speculate on why they are what they are, but they are deeply committed to banning all firearms. And that's really the end goal. Is it doesn't matter if it's a micro Uzi, a fully automatic micro Uzi, or a flintlock musket. They don't care. If it shoots a bullet and makes a boom, they don't want it. Or an air gun. I mean, these people are so anti-gun. But on the other hand, there's people like us who, yeah, we associated firearms with violent crime. Maybe I went over to that friend I mentioned's house and was like, all right, yeah, I need to shoot the 1911. And he opened up the safe and it wasn't there. He goes, oh, my dad's out running errands. He's probably carrying it. And I just thought, we're out in the middle of nowhere, Maine. Why would you need to carry a gun? How paranoid could you be? How dumb? Plus, I want to shoot the thing. But the second kind, they're willing to learn about guns. They're willing to shoot guns. They're willing to hear your arguments. They're willing to talk about the issue. They may associate gun owners with bad things. You'll certainly get the kind that'll be, oh, Tiffany, I want to ban guns, but I'm perfectly fine with you having guns.
Yes.
That is a prime example of someone who, be very, very delicate with that person, because that's someone we can turn.
Yes.
Because if they understand that, yes, you have a gun. Yes, you may carry a firearm. Yes, you may be an instructor. Yes, you may be a sports shooter. Yes, you may, you know, be an action pistol, you know, competitor. And they're fine with that. But there's some nebulous other person that they want to keep away from guns. That's someone that you can work with.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a little bit different. I mean, I sometimes feel I really fail in the fact that I'm a scientist, so I'm super logical. So I'm really just a point of showing people information, showing people data. I'm not actually even don't even show them anymore. Now I just tell people where they can find it. Go look at the FBI crime report data. Dig it up yourself. Don't let me send you a link because you're not going to believe me. You're going to think that I found the best link. Go prove me wrong, because most of the time they've done no research on this whatsoever. You know, go look at the FBI. Go look up, you know, some research. Go bring me some anti-gun studies, and I'll show you where they made mistakes. But at the same time, I do have a friend who's certainly not anti-gun, but he's very pro-gun control, and he's a nut that's not going to crack. And he's just one of those, like, yeah, but, you know, yeah, you may have guns, but there are all those dead. He's from Connecticut. There's all those dead kids in Newtown, and I'm like, yeah, there are. I can't make that go away.
Right. Well, on that note, since that's a whole separate can of worms, I am now even more eager to talk to you about this more and more. So maybe we'll have to do this again in double segment another time. But I'm getting the look of death from Sean, who's saying that we've already taken way too much time. So thank you so much for joining me for my segment, Weird. And I hope we can team up again in the future. Is that okay?
We absolutely have to do this again.
Awesome. All right. Enjoy the rest of your week.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com. In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week. This week's plug is for Merrell's Jungle Mock Shoes. I now have a garage, and you would not believe how that changes your need to have, I mean, you know, something other than shoes you have to spend time lacing up. And I'm not old enough to feel comfortable walking around in slippers. Ew. You know, that's what my dad does. He just has a set of slippers. Actually, I think he drove all the way here from his house in his slippers. He brought shoes with him, obviously, but he drove in his slippers. I'm like, I'm not going to be seen in public in slippers. I wanted something that I could go out and get the mail. I could go out into the garage and go get something in the garage and not walk around in sock feet. Because I walk around my house in sock feet, but I didn't want to get all that dirt on, you know, from the cement out in the garage all over my socks. So my wife bought me a set of those like soccer slide things. They're like flip-flops, but they don't go between your toes. They just sort of go over your feet. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? And they were all right. I could slide them on over my socks and go out into the garage, but I didn't really like them that much.
Have you tried the Crocs?
You know what those holes in the Crocs are? That's for where your dignity can leak out.
Yeah, well, I have no shame because I wear those.
Oh, I think they're horrible. So no, won't be caught in those. Now, I mean, if you work in a place where like hospital workers, you know, operating room workers, people who work in veterinary clinics. So those are, you know, practical shoes for that, but I'm not going to wear them. So I also wanted something that was waterproof and wasn't the boots that I wear normally for work, because I was running through these $120 Keen boots like every 4 months because I was just walking that many miles with the dog. And between that and wearing them all day, I was just breaking them down. So I had been walking instead of tennis shoes. But I had to lace them up, and you know, I couldn't just slip them on and go out and get the mail or go get something out of the car or something like that. So I looked around, and I found these pair of Merrell Jungle Mock shoes. And do you remember Vans used to sell a set of shoes that didn't have laces on them? Like everybody had these Vans shoes?
Vaguely, yeah.
Vaguely, back when we were probably 12 or 14. They're like the... I don't even know what they were called, but they were, you know, they were skater shoes.
Yeah.
Take that concept, but turn it into a hiking boot. And these things, these Merrell Jungle Mock shoes, are essentially hiking slippers.
Okay.
You just slip them on. They're actually marketed for you to use on the trail. Now, I walk my dog in the morning for 3 miles in these things. They're not waterproof, but they're water resistant, which means that the dew on the grass doesn't soak my feet between here and the end of the street, which, you know, that's exactly what happened to my tennis shoes. You can get them for about $60 on Amazon. I've got a link for them. They have all different colors from this weirdo orange color to black. These are really nice shoes. They're really comfortable to walk in. And like I said, I walk 3 miles in the morning, and anytime I have to go out to, you know, the garage, or anytime I need to go out to get the mail at the street or take the trash out or anything like that, you can just slip them on like they're slippers, and you don't feel like an old dude wandering around in carpet slippers, which is just kind of weird. So check it out on the show notes, and they're on Amazon for about $60. Well, that's our show for the week.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode101.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you.
This is a URS production.